Welcome to AM Best Audio.
Protests compared to the 1960s are rocking college campuses across the United States, and the political environment is becoming more polarized during this presidential election year. The Beasley Geopolitical Risk Snapshot 2024 found that 32% of U.S. business leaders believe political risk is now the biggest threat to their businesses. I'm Lori Chortis for AM Best TV. And joining us now are Lucy Straker, Political Violence and Deadly Weapons Protection Focus Group Leader, and Matt Westhoff, Head of North American Commercial Property, both with Beasley. Lucy and Matt, welcome. It's wonderful to see you both. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Lucy, what are the key takeaways of the research in regard to the United States?
Thank you so much. I think the biggest thing is what you highlighted in the title is that one in three U.S. executives believe they currently operate in a high-risk environment. We're gearing up for an election at the end of this year, and America is more polarized than ever before. You have emotionally charged topics that continue to dominate the conversations and agendas around these two candidates. And where emotions run high, you have the potential for things to escalate into violence. Gun violence is at its highest level ever, with 181 mass shootings so far this year. And fueling the above violence is the fact that we're in a 24-hour news cycle. We have wars that extend beyond borders. You have social media driving extremism. And ultimately, people want to be heard and for someone to pay the price if they feel wronged. So we've been here before to an extent. And hindsight's a really powerful tool. If you look back in 2021 and 2020, you know, the US saw Black Lives Matter demonstrations across the country following the deaths of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. You then had the storming of the Capitol on January the 6th, which, you know, served as a stark reminder as to how quickly things can escalate. I think furthermore, what's probably less talked about is the fact that back in 2020, you also saw gun violence almost double. A mass shooting is defined as an event where four or more people are shot or killed. And back in 2020, mass shootings on a monthly basis jumped from 35 per month to 51 a month. It was a record-breaking year. So I think if you look at those trends and where we are today, it's reasonable to expect that violence is going to continue to escalate in the coming months as we get closer to the election. Yet despite all of this, you know, despite this backdrop that we've set, a quarter of business leaders admit that they feel unprepared to deal with the challenges they face today. So the risk is identified and far accelerated, yet they still aren't prepared.
And Matt, what about globally?
I think globally overall, the message is very similar. Outside the US, roughly 40% of executives believe they currently operate in a high-risk environment. 25% of them said war and terrorism was their number one threat this year. And I think that we're operating in a very unique situation this year because we have roughly 50% of the world's population voting in an election. That's an estimated 4 billion votes being cast across the world. And when you have elections, you have potential for violence and unrest. Transition to leadership oftentimes can lead to that. And our research shows that 70% of business leaders are concerned that the outcome of these elections will impact their international operations and their ability to trade. So I think overall the message is very similar globally. The world is a more risky place than it was 4 years ago, and businesses need to be prepared.
Matt, I was just going to add to that. And I think what's perhaps interesting is that, you know, you've asked about the US and then you've asked about the rest of the world. But I don't think today we can look at the world in isolation in that way. It's no longer a case of watching something on the news or reading it in the newspaper and feeling far away. Today, politics from overseas continues to infiltrate our own political agendas and conversations. And as we highlighted above, you know, you have wars that come across borders. And as a result, I think you have to look at the world as a whole.
Lucy, what risks do the 2024 elections present?
So the threat of violence today is substantial. We've highlighted that obviously America is more polarized than ever before, and you've got extremism that exists where it didn't previously. We spoke about in the intro that 32% of US business leaders believe that political risk is the biggest threat to their business. Yet, you know, we focus on that 32% and you highlighted it, but it's still not enough. It's still only 32%. And I think what's shocking is the fact that everyone believes, or the fact that not everyone believes, sorry, that they have an exposure in today's landscape. And that's an issue. You know, that violence stems to day-to-day violence between people with opposing views, whether that's at work, at soccer games, the school run, or at the dining room table. Essentially, violence is spilling into our everyday situations. You've obviously got the threat of violence at polling places or political gatherings as we become closer to election day. But I guess underlying all of that, you also have the two views, i.e. the general acceptance of violence today that never existed before. I used to live in New York and now I live in Charleston, but I lived in New York a few years ago. And back then you could have a conversation about politics without the fear of retribution. So people respected your views even if they disagreed with your views. And that's no longer the case today. You can no longer voice your opinion without the risk of violence against you. We're so conditioned to violence that it also no longer shocks us. So, you know, whilst 32% of people believe that political risk is the biggest threat to their business, 68% of people don't think it's a threat to their business. So that denial stands in the way of getting anything done. People believe it won't happen to them, or that it won't affect their business, and that's a problem.
Yeah, just to add, I would say that, you know, history, using history as a guide, we've seen these two candidates run against each other in the past, and there was, you know, obviously we know what happened then. And as Lucy mentioned, the temper in the country is arguably higher right now than it was back then. So I think, you know, using history as a guide, there is an expectation that there certainly could be civil unrest, property damage, violence. So I think that we need to look at 4 years ago and use that as a benchmark.
Matt, are commercial organizations sufficiently covered by property policies for these risks? And in what circumstances are standalone policies needed and why?
Yeah, so I think sufficient coverage is really sort of defined by your own individual exposures, right? But I will say a standard all-risk property policy does provide some coverage for strikes, riots, and civil commotion, or as we call SRCC, unless it's specifically excluded. But these policies will normally have some sort of physical damage trigger. They will cover you for property damage, resulting loss of income, potentially some coverage extensions outside of that. But it's very important for insurers to understand the terms and conditions of these policies. You know, what are the coverage triggers? What are the definitions, such as occurrence definitions? What are my sublimits? How will my deductibles apply? I think standalone comes into play in instances where the all-risk market no longer has an appetite for that risk. So it could be something that's deemed high risk. It could be a certain region of the world that they're uncomfortable with. It could be prior loss history. It could be events that recently happened. And I think that's where the standalone market comes into play, because you have expert underwriters, you have policies specifically designed to respond to these type of events, and they could offer a broader appetite and sometimes additional capacity.
I would add to that that I think, you know, property or standalone coverage, both of those policies are going to focus primarily on first party coverage. And as Matt highlighted, often the trigger is that physical damage requirement. However, you know, as we've seen in campus protests across the US, there isn't necessarily always a physical damage trigger, but you could still have substantial disruption to your day-to-day business operations. Furthermore, I think in today's society, it's such a service-driven society that people often want something more, especially when navigating the potential for violence on a daily basis. And for that, we just encourage all businesses and suggest that they should all be considering standalone active assailant or deadly weapons protection. So it's a product that is designed to assist you in the face of violence. It offers crisis prevention and response before, during, and after the first signs of violence. And it's triggered by a potential warning or the mere threat of brandishing a weapon. So what's different about it is the fact that it's a holistic offering that focuses on protecting your people, first and foremost, your brand, and your reputation. So your people are your biggest asset, but they're also your greatest risk. And majority of traditional insurance options aren't necessarily tailored to protect that asset. So I'm not devaluing the traditional insurance options, as, you know, often they work well when purchased in conjunction with each other. But I think that businesses need to understand that if you're trying to protect your people and your business in the face of violence, you need to make sure you have sufficient cover to protect all of those assets. And often that's going to lead you down the specialist insurance coverage options.
Customize your data experience. BestLink now offers an interactive company dashboard that provides company-level intelligence in a fast, user-friendly interface featuring interactive tables, charts, and Sparkline performance histories. Customize the dashboard tiles to prioritize the insurer ratings, data, and analytics that best support your workflow. AM Best. Our insight, your advantage.
Have there been insurance implications in regard to the protest at college campuses across the country?
I think the implications are really raised awareness to the situation. And we've seen clients and brokers having discussions with us around, you know, confirming coverage, looking for more limit, or looking at what their deductibles are, their policy language, looking at alternative products such as what Lucy just mentioned, whether it's deadly weapons protection or, in certain cases, event cancellation coverage if you are planning a college graduation or a concert or a sporting event, and they could be influenced by these protests. So I think it's been a raised awareness across the industry, and we are seeing people, which is good, because I think, especially in the property space, the conversation has been dominated by things like climate change, inflation, increased reinsurance costs, all of which are very serious issues and needed to be discussed. But I think it kind of put strikes, riots, and civil commotion sort of at the tail end of the risk. And people need to be aware of it. And it's certainly all those other things are just as important, or if not more, but this needs to be up the level as far as your risk management strategy.
I think, as Matt says, you know, previously Americans have always been very reactive as opposed to proactive when it comes to SLCC. And as he's highlighted, you know, this is now on the front end putting that risk on the table. Americans are awakened to the fact that it's a real threat to US soil, whereas previously maybe we looked at it on an isolated scale that affected those more volatile or distressed territories globally. And as we can see, it's not the case there today. But I think, you know, yes, it's great that clients are being proactive, but they also need to understand that the closer you get to the action, you know, the closer we're going to come to election day, potentially the harder it is going to be to come across coverage, whether that's purchasing increased limits within your or risk options, buying standalone or buying specialist insurance cover. You know, as the risk accelerates, that appetite is going to decrease. Additionally, you know, Matt mentioned you've got graduation ceremonies. We've broken up for summer. So right now, the majority of universities are probably not necessarily thinking about that risk for the next week, month, whatever it might be. But ultimately, they still need to be prepared to come, you know, September or the beginning of the school year when things might flare up again, especially if the Israel-Hamas war is still ongoing and we near the election. At that point, it probably will be harder for universities and higher education clients to purchase SLCC cover on a standalone or even on an all-risk basis.
So, Matt, have universities been sufficiently covered for the disruption? And what coverages have applied and what types of claims have we seen?
So I think instead of talking about specific claims, I think we'll talk sort of what we expect to see in these sort of events, right? So obviously, there could be property damage loss, There could be loss of income because you can no longer operate your business. There could be potential for extra expense if campuses are having to employ additional security personnel or other mitigating factors that may come with costs associated with that. And obviously outside of just sort of the property world, you know, if the violence escalates, you could see claims for injuries to faculty members, which would obviously bring in workers' comp. If your staff, your students, or volunteers, we could be talking about liability coverage. So this really sort of spreads outside of just the property physical damage space, and it could bleed over to several different coverages in the industry.
Matt, I think we were talking about this yesterday, and we spoke about a specific client because the 1st of July is a massive renewal date for a lot of educational clients. And obviously we've seen what's happened across the US at college campuses. And we had one of our insureds come in, and from a deadly weapon protection standpoint, and they turned around, they said, you know, they've seen a loss within the all-risk market as a result of college campuses, as a result of the college protests that they'd seen. So, you know, as Matt says, there are going to be claims, but I think a lot of them are just materializing now and probably in the lead up to the renewal. The other thing to consider is obviously, you know, if that unrest develops into violence, then there is the potential for deadly weapons cover or an active assailant type policy to kick in. As we highlighted above, it would obviously not just only cover your liability, but any crisis response services before, during, and after an event. The other thing to consider is, and again, Matt touched on it, you've had graduation ceremonies as we near the end of the school year, and you would have had many institutions assessing whether it was safe to continue with said graduation ceremony, or whether it was necessary to cancel or change that ceremony for fear of disruption. So some institutions may have had specialist event cancellation cover in respect of those ceremonies in particular, or other such special events, whether that's parades, etc., to signify the end of the year. So those institutions that may have had cover may have had to trigger those policies for any losses arising out of the cancellation and or change. But I think, you know, the unique thing about SRCC as a peril is it's not, as we've spoken about earlier, not just an isolated peril. So it has the ability to travel. So the knock-on effect of what we've seen at college campuses across the US is going to affect other businesses. If you think of that graduation ceremony in particular, you may have hotels or restaurants, etc., that may have relied on the mass, input of people coming in to go to that graduation ceremony. So if that ceremony is then cancelled or postponed, etc., then they're going to feel the knock-on effect of that through a downturn in their business. So some of those businesses may have specifically purchased loss of attraction cover with SRCC as a listed peril, which mean that they could ultimately claim for that downturn in business that they suffer as a result of what's happening within neighboring properties.
So Lucy, how can these risks be mitigated?
So I think when you focus specifically on college campuses, you have to focus on who you are and where you are. So what I mean by that is who you are, i.e. if you are private or public, and what is allowed for each of those, whether you're private or public. Where you are, so where you're located geographically from a state perspective, but also if you have exposure overseas. When dealing particularly with these protests, it's also important for institutions to strike a balance between the right to freedom of speech and the requirement for safety and security on a college campus. But I think, you know, when thinking specifically about preventative measures, there are a number of measures that can apply to not just college campuses, but to anyone who's operating a business in the US today, and also globally, I guess. So the first thing we'd say is, you know, do your research. Whether that's social media monitoring, whether that's tracking, if your business is coming up on various sites, understand who's saying what and when. If you are a college campus and or a institution that's hosting a political debate or political talk, understand who those speakers are, whether that's that speaker on college campus or whether they're coming to your business. Do a background check on that speaker. You also need to be aware of your policies. So, you know, remind everyone, your key stakeholders, your students, your employees, etc., of the policies that are going to apply to gathering, protesting, weapons, etc. I think there are now 29 states in the US that allow free carry of weapons. So you have to assume that there will be weapons on site. Whether it escalates into violence or not is another matter, but assume that there will be the potential for that. Adopt a protest policy, you know, that outlines how all these issues are going to be managed and responded to. And I think also make sure that people are aware of that protest policy. From a facility standpoint, again, whether you are in campus institution or not, there are going to be certain areas that will be utilized for gathering. Understand the risks associated with those areas, whether it's access, quality of cell service, availability of communication, any environmental concerns, and make sure you plan ahead for those risks. So if communications will be a challenge because you've got mass congregation of people in a confined space that, you know, cell service might be difficult, obtain the equipment needed to ensure that you are then not having that issue later down the line. Know the laws. That's going to be huge. Understand what freedom of speech means and where it goes. If it goes too far, understand what you legally can and cannot do as it relates to security, use of force. And a lot of that is obviously going to come into play when we talk about where you are located geographically. So if you have exposure overseas in the UK or, you know, Europe or further afield, you're going to have different rules and regulations and legal requirements than you would say if you're based in the US solely. Make sure legal counsel are aware of what you're doing and that, you know, they have oversight of everything you do in advance. I think the other thing to consider is, you know, let people know in advance what the triggers are going to be for shutting down that protest. We spoke about policies, but make people aware, communicate with them to know these are the barriers. And at this point, when you breach a certain trigger or barrier, this is how we will step in, so that they are very well aware of what would happen if something unfolds. And be prepared. You know, we discussed earlier how a lot of businesses aren't prepared, but make sure you test all your communication abilities. Coordinate with law enforcement, conduct drills, drills of your crisis management, drills of crisis communication, develop your worst case scenario and test them. Because you have to be ready to respond if the unthinkable happens. Violence could unfold and it could result in shootings, trampling injuries, criminal activities, and you don't want your worst case scenario to occur and you to be sort of standing there being like, I just didn't think about this. I had no idea this was an option. And above all, you have to remember that you have to protect your people, your brand, and your reputation, because you don't want to be that university or that institution that had that issue, that shooting, that protest, and it be detrimental to you going forward afterwards.
Matt, going back to the US and across the world in general, how can geopolitical risk be mitigated?
Yes, I think it's fairly similar to some of the stuff that Lucy just talked about, right? But I think in general, it's really about scenario planning, having robust contingency strategies in place. This is a very fast evolving political landscape. Things are changing quite quickly. So you need to analyze your risk, conduct a violence risk assessment. You know, what is the risk in your business? What's the risk in your customer's business, your supplier's business? You know, where am I located, right? What's the risk based on where am I located? Do we have operations globally? My county, my state, For example, you know, are you watching to see if threats materialize? Are you prepared to perhaps temporarily close your business if you had to reduce the impact to your critical assets, your people, your property, et cetera? Identify threats and vulnerabilities, develop monitoring strategies, right? I know we talk a lot about, I think we talk a lot more sort of to the sophisticated risk management purchasers, but not every business has those resources. Not everyone has a dedicated risk management team. There is technology out there that even small business owners or medium-sized business owners could sign up for. There are apps they could get updates to what's happening. And then also purchase insurance, right? There are insurance products out there to help protect you. That's what, you know, Lucy and I do every day, and Beasley does every day. And it's important that you're telling your underwriters, telling your brokers what risk mitigation factors you have in place of what you're doing, right? Those are the conversations we want to have. That will impact your pricing, your coverage, your limit. So we need to be having those conversations.
Matt, you make a great point in terms of, I would also just add, you know, we had one of our clients come to us and ask us a bunch of questions about what they could and could not cover. And I think a lot of people just see insurance as a ticking the box exercise. But as we highlighted earlier, people often want something more than just, you know, a blank check at the end of the day or their property covered, or they often want their hand holding. And that's where I think specialist insurance comes in. And we can't underwrite what we don't know. So at Beasley, we're slightly unique in that we want that relationship with our clients. We want to hold their hands. We want to be there for them before and after something happens. So that's the value of specialist insurance, is that often you can get a product or you can get tailor-made solutions or specialist insurance solutions to fit with the uniqueness of your business. But unless we have those conversations, we don't know. And you are going to know your business way better than we will ever know your business. So have those conversations early with underwriters and make sure you build that relationship with underwriters, because, you know, they're going to be the people who you're dealing with before, during, and after something happens.
Lucy, what is your best advice from your research for how insurers and business leaders navigate the conflict, disruption, and violence that could potentially take place this year?
I think the biggest thing from our geopolitical report is that we highlight forewarned is forearmed when it comes to geopolitical risk. So we urge and we encourage our clients to be prepared, as political risk and political violence insurance will be harder to come by in the face of a contentious election, where there is heightened risk of social upheaval or violence. So, you know, first and foremost, I think people need to believe that bad things can happen in this country. Don't allow denial of the possibility of disruption to get in your way of doing something about it. If you don't believe it will happen, you won't prepare adequately. So we have to assume that we will have political disruption. And if we don't, then it's a win-win for everyone. You also have to create awareness among key stakeholders. So educate them on what could happen and what their role is in the prevention. I.e., is it reporting of warning signs? Is it de-escalation? Every single person needs to understand what their role is to prevent and respond. Put mechanisms in place for reporting, especially including anonymous reporting. And hopefully that will increase the chances of people coming forward if they hear or see something that could pose a threat. I think Matt and I were speaking about it, but, you know, every year we have a Beasley mass notification system just, you know, test. And every year they ring me and leave a voicemail. And it drives me insane every year because I hate listening to voicemails. So I think businesses need to be aware that when you are putting in those mechanisms for reporting, for communication, you need to make sure you're covering every communication method that is going to reach every generation, whether that is text messages or tweeting the younger generation. Make sure you have it all covered. Monitor open source intelligence for risk behavior and threats. And that's not just going to be on social media, but it's going to be on the wider networks. I think you also have to train people. You know, as we said earlier, they're your biggest asset, but also your greatest risk. So often when it comes down to violence, they're going to be there as your first responders. So make sure they know what to do in the face of verbal and physical violence. Make sure they understand what those protocols are, what the de-escalation strategies are, and you know how to mitigate the harm that could result. If you're a soft target, understand that and make sure you harden yourself against that risk. So retail is going to be the obvious one. As we've seen previously when mass protests erupted, you know, retail assets tend to get smashed windows as they're often on high streets and so forth, and therefore fully exposed. But consider if you are a bar or a nightclub that's open late and you serve alcohol, you are also a soft target. If you have people drinking alcohol, it often, you know, drives emotion. And again, late at night, where you have emotion, you often have the potential for violence to flare up. So understand that and know what you're doing about it. Coordinate with law enforcement in advance to ensure that you understand what their response is going to look like, what you can expect from them, from a resource allocation, from a timing, from a communication, etc. Understand how you're going to work with them. We spoke about earlier about the communication, but again, make sure you have adequate communication in place, assessing or addressing every type of communication. I think the big thing and the final thing we'll end with is, you know, what we like to ask our clients. And that is often, you know, if I told you that, or if I asked you if you're going to have a shooting or some form of violence, are you prepared? And I think what we've highlighted above is that, you know, at least a quarter of businesses don't think they are prepared to deal with that. So the other thing we'd say is, if we told you that in 30 days' time, you are going to have a shooting or some form of violence, what are you doing as a business between today and in the next 30 days to make sure that you are prepared? Because as we've said, forewarned is forearmed.
Lucy and Matt, this has been so informative. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you.
That was Lucy Straker, Political Violence and Deadly Weapons Protection Focus Group Leader, and Matt Westhoff, Head of North American Commercial Property, both with Beasley. For AM Best TV, I'm Lori Chortis.
Looking to get the full attention of the insurance industry? We have the platforms that will do just that. Whether it be AM Best TV, AM Best Audio, Best Review Magazine, or Best Day. Find out more by calling AM Best Advertising Sales at 908-439-2200, extension 5399, and have a great day.